And Glenda said, "I think I can accommodate you." And overnight, she wrote that song for the folks at camp. They're very talented individuals. Cody, we welcome you as a part of our fellowship. And you know, I love your mom and dad a lot, and it's a joy to have you here, and your brother too. And it's good to have you here. And hope you have a good stay at Texas State, and we welcome you as a part of the family. Several weeks ago, we started this series on building a fair-proof marriage, and we want to do the fourth and final installment of this. We, of course, had a break last week because of our meeting. And the purpose of this series of lessons has been basically how can you build or rebuild your marriage by learning to meet the needs of your mate. And in this series of lessons, we have looked at the top five needs of man and woman. And of course, with regard to the wife, it's affection, conversation, honesty, financial security, family commitment. And with regard to the husband, intimacy, recreational partner, attractive wife, domestic support, and admiration. And we have demonstrated, I believe, that all of these needs are also represented in Scripture. And the reason why is because this is the way God made man and woman. And therefore, the purpose of the lessons is for the wife to focus on the needs of her husband, and for the husband to focus on the needs of his wife. And therefore, we suggested that a great rule to follow in marriage to make it successful is what we commonly call the golden rule, when Jesus said, "Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." So if I'm using that rule, then I'm not going to be reminding her of my needs, but what I'm going to be doing is focusing on her needs. And vice versa, I'm not going to be reminding him of my needs, but rather I'm going to be focusing upon the needs of my husband. Now, we've already talked about, with regard to these needs, the first few needs of the wife and all of the needs of the husband. And what we want to do today is to focus on these last three needs of the wife. And the third one is honesty. You see, a sense of security is woven throughout all the basic needs of the woman. Whether we're talking about affection, the need for approval, whether we're talking about conversation, that is, the need for open conversation, for there to be active speaking, assertiveness, and active living. The point is that the wife needs security. In fact, I would suggest to you that even the last two point to the basic fact that, by and large, women need security. And therefore, she needs to trust her husband. She needs for him to provide honest information, information about his past, information about his track record will help to provide a solid foundation for the future. In fact, honesty, basically, is one of the most important qualities, not only to marriage, but it is the most important, I think, quality that is successful to any relationship, whether we're talking about a local church, whether we're talking about the neighborhood, business, or in fact, that's what's wrong right now with our business world, is there have been a lot of folks that have been dishonest. And so what we need is we need some honesty and integrity. So the question is, do you know your spouse, or how well do you know your spouse, and how well does your spouse know you? You know, in the book of Genesis, when we go back to the beginning of marriage, God said, "Therefore, a man shall leave father and mother, be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." The point is this, that you should know your spouse, and your spouse should know you better than even your parents knew you. Man should leave father and mother, be cleave to his wife, and the two to become one flesh. Therefore, husbands, wives want to know how you feel. Wives want you to tell them the truth. And it is foolish to lie even out of fear. In fact, I would suggest to you that there are three kinds of liars. There are born liars. I remember meeting that fellow on the playground a few years ago when I was in the first grade. I knew all the time he wouldn't tell the truth. Every word was a lie. I well remember that fella. And there are unfortunately some 35-year-old fellas that haven't learned since the playground days how to tell the truth. That will obviously disrupt a marriage. There are the guys that want to avoid trouble. They lie just, you know, to avoid trouble. It may not be compulsive, may not be as drastic as the born liar, but nonetheless, it can obviously have devastating effects upon the marriage. And then there are some who lie to protect. Well, you know, I don't really want her to know the truth. I don't really want her to know how I feel. I don't want her to lose a lot of sleep. And so they fail to open up and to tell the truth in order to protect her. I would suggest to you that the last one is chauvinism at its best. The fact is that she is concerned, if she's the kind of person she ought to be, she is concerned, number one, with meeting your needs. He didn't want to hurt her feelings. And so he fails to tell the truth, and she fails to meet the need, and both are hurt. All this does is feed a sense of superiority in the male, and it suggests that he has a very low opinion of his wife. And the vicious cycle continues with absolutely no change. But when the truth is told, it begins to build the emotional stability in the relationship that is necessary. Let me illustrate that by a New Testament passage that basically deals with the relationship that we have with brethren or with neighbor. He says, therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor. Why? Because we belong to one another. The question commonly comes, does privacy have its place? Well, if that means keeping a sense of hidden self, then it has, as far as I'm concerned, no place within the marriage relationship. If we do that, we begin to have problems. And here's another illustration of that. In the book of James, the 5th chapter, the 16th verse, James says, confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. Now, I realize that James is primarily dealing with a brother-to-brother relationship. But what person in this world should want to help me with my problems more than my mate? You know, the goal of every marriage should be that I want to help my husband and my wife get to heaven. That means that when the male comes or the female comes, the wife or the husband comes and says, I have a problem. That first of all, we need to be open to listening to them. And at the same time, we should also feel that our spouse is the one person that would truly gently listen to us when we have a problem that we need to share with them. And so James says that we are to confess our trespasses to each other. And the one person in this world that ought to really care about us more than anyone else should be our mate. There's something else I want to talk to you about with regard to this honesty and integrity. Oftentimes marriages fail because of a lack of trust, because of suspicion. In fact, there are two words that we commonly find, unfortunately, in unhappy marriages. She's suspicious, but he's flirty. Now, what do you think is going to happen with that one? Sometimes the problem is that she's over-suspicious. But sometimes she's suspicious because she has a right to be suspicious. And so we have this common conflict going on between the man and the woman. Husbands, give your wives a reason to trust. Sometimes I encourage husbands to call their wives several times a day. Hey, listen, I'm over here. This is what's going on. You know, it may be a little late before I get home. You can expect me about 5:45. And at 5:44, you're rolling in the driveway. And she's got supper ready. But make sure that your wife can trust you. And if there is a problem with that, try to do everything within your power to increase that level of trust and integrity. You'll do that. Be where you say you're going to be. Don't be all over the place. Do what you say you're going to do within your power, and you can build for that happy relationship. Integrity and trust is absolutely essential to a happy marriage. But not only does she need honesty, but she needs financial security. She needs enough money to live comfortably. Question: does a woman marry a man for his money? Yes. In fact, Paul says in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8, if a man provides not for his own, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. She needs for him to earn enough money to support her well. In fact, the reality is that 50% of marriage problems come from financial insecurity. In fact, it is number 3 on the list in divorce courts. The 3rd reason from the top for divorce are problems with money. You see, her insecurity is a primary reason many marriages break up, her financial insecurity. And furthermore, most married women resent it when she has to be the breadwinner. A failure to supply the basic can cause a number of problems. Now, with regard to money, though, I want to add a warning. You see, the Lord also adds a warning, and then we're going to make an application of this. Open to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 8. God warned Israel about financial prosperity. He says, when you have eaten or full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full, and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt and from the house of bondage. When I talk about she needs to be supported well, I'm not talking about a sports car in the driveway. I'm not talking about a 2-story mansion. I'm talking about that the obligation of the husband is to meet basic needs and to supply basic needs. Again, Jesus gives a warning about financial prosperity in the book of Matthew, the 6th chapter, beginning with verse 19. Do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourself treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So, when talking about financial security, we also need to talk about something that we commonly don't think of in America. In fact, I would suggest to you that's why we're in the midst of an economic crisis. Because not only do families fail, but government fails. And unfortunately, corporate America has failed to understand the simplicity of a budget. Got to have a budget. In fact, it's interesting that Solomon says in the book of Proverbs, chapter 21 and verse 20, there is desirable treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man squanders it. You see, God wants us to be good stewards of what we have. And therefore, we need to have a budget. A budget. Budget, real simple. First of all, what do we need? Now, by need, I mean the basic necessities for comfort, for a comfortable life. I'm not talking about wants, but I'm talking about basic needs. Number 2, what do we want? By want, I mean things that bring pleasure. Now, I have a real problem when someone says, and I've heard this quite commonly, in fact, Tommy and I have talked about this quite commonly in our younger generation, that the first thing that they want to purchase is high-speed internet with the, giant package from Time Warner. And they've got to have that before they have food on the table. Now, there's something wrong with that picture, as far as I'm concerned. That is not a need. That's a want. So what do you need? Well, first of all, we need to make sure we got beans and rice on the table, right? Cornbread. Something to eat. A roof over our house. Clothes to wear. The basic necessities and comforts of life. Then number 2, what do we want? And then number 3, what can we afford? Now, by By asking that question, there's a simple equation here with regard to budget. How much do you make? It's going to determine how much you can spend. Whatever it is that you bring in is going to determine how much goes out, right? And the reality is that oftentimes, though, because of our extravagant wants, then we spend more than we make. And when we do that, we begin to have problems. We either do that, or then we begin to get on the borrowing, you know, path, which often, ultimately, can, if not kept in check, lead to disaster. So, simple budget. What do you need? Well, I've got to have food on the table and a roof over the head and a car to drive to work. What do I want? Well, if we have some left over, we can perhaps provide for those wants. If not, then we need to keep a budget. What do we need? What do we want? And number three, what can we afford? And I would suggest to you that primarily the ideal situation is that we need to use the husband income to meet needs. And if you can't meet the needs, there may need to be an adjustment in our standard of living. But first meet the needs, then the wants, and then ask the question, then what can we truly afford based upon the income? Then finally, not only does she need financial security, but she needs family commitment. You see, women have a strong sense of family unit. Women have a powerful instinct to raise a family. In fact, a good illustration of that, as far as I'm concerned, are two of the most ungodly women in our society, Madonna and Britney Spears. They have kids. Because the reality is that even those women have an instinct and a need to have a child, even though as far as I'm concerned, they're completely unfit to be a mother. Women have this natural instinct, this motherly instinct, and they can add a mother's touch to a home like no one else can do. But what she wants is she wants the husband to take the lead in this. And not only does she desire that, but notice what God says, and I should have changed the top of that, made that chart the last minute, but notice what God says about fathers. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Notice that the charge to raise the children is not given to the church. It is not given to the wife, but rather this charge by Paul is given to the father. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. The reality is that fathers need to play a key role in the nation, in the church, and in family. I want you to think about this, dads. Think about the relationship that God's people have with who? Our Father who is in heaven. Our role model as fathers is God Himself. In fact, the reality is that the greatest representation that your children, physical representation of God that your children will ever see is you. If they don't respect your authority, chances are they will never respect the authority of God. If they don't understand and see the characteristics of the Heavenly Father in view, then it will be difficult for them to see and understand the characteristics that God has to offer of grace, of mercy, of justice, of all the wonderful qualities, of this sense of protection, of this desire to discipline, of this desire to offer and to care for us and supply for us. We need to try to imitate the Heavenly Father. I'm going to tell you something else. Parenting takes time. You see, man needs to devote time to his family. And quality time comes by quantity. And it means that we plan activities around our children. Meals together as a family. Going out for walks and bike rides. Attending religious services. Conducting family meetings. Playing a board game together. Maybe on a Friday night. playing a board game together, attending sporting events, reading to the children before bedtime, helping with the children with financial planning, family projects that we can work on together. All of these will help to build that relationship with your children, and it will also be making deposits in the love bank of your wife at the same time. So take time to be with your children. There's a good illustration of that in the New Testament with a word that is commonly used in the New Testament. The Greek word is storge, is familial love or the love of kindred or brotherly love. And it's closely akin, by the way, to the word store. And in the book of Romans chapter 1, when Paul was talking about the sin of the Gentiles, he says they are undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful. The word unloving is the very opposite, obviously, of this familial kindred love. But I want you to notice something that is stated according to history with regard to the Roman Empire, its fall. Storge was the special Greek word for family love. It is quite true that this was an age in which family love was dying. Never was the life of the child so precarious as at this time. When a child was born, the child was taken and laid at the father's feet. If the father lifted up the child, that meant he acknowledged it. If he turned away and left it, the child was literally thrown out. There was never a night when 30 or 40 abandoned children were not left in the Roman Forum. Seneca wrote, "We plunge the knife into the sickly cattle, lest they taint the herd. Children who were born weakly and deformed, we drown. The natural bonds of human affection had been destroyed." And someone said, "Well, I'm not going to do that. I know you." But there's another way to commit spiritual abortion. Neglect your children. Just neglect them. Don't spend time with them. And it's a good way to commit spiritual abortion. Give your children the time that they need. Do not rely upon the local church to be their spiritual leader. You be the spiritual leader of your household. And not only will you meet the needs of your children, but you'll also put money in the love bank of your wife. With regard to children, let's suggest some rules for parenting. First of all, number one, be consistent. And what I mean by be consistent is, if you have rules that depend upon moods, not going to work. And I know sometimes we're all moody. We come in, we're in a bad, had a bad day. But if rules are based upon whether or not you're happy or grumpy, it's not going to work. You need to teach your children the difference between appropriate and inappropriate behavior and do the best that you can to make the rules, to make them stick, and to discipline them consistently regardless of the mood that you may be in at that moment. That's hard. It's hard. I know. I understand that. But be consistent. Number two, learn to punish properly. Over in the book of Proverbs, we certainly find a number of examples of corporal punishment. For example, in Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 24, Solomon says, "He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly." And in Proverbs, the 19th chapter and the 18th verse, Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 18, again, Solomon says, "Chasten your son while there is hope, and do not set your heart on his destruction." Chasten him while there is hope. That is in the young, formative years, in the young years, while, his character or her character can be molded. Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 14. Verses 13 and 14. "Do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell." Certainly there is a place in biblical perspective for corporal punishment, but use it wisely. Choose your battles. use it for outright rebellion, but not for little mistakes when they spill the milk or whatever the case may be, when they may make a mistake. Make sure that you choose your battles and use it wisely. I can remember a mother, I'm not going to name names, not in here, you don't have to worry about this audience, but I remember a mother that spanked her little child for everything. And you know what? It finally got to a point where he just didn't pay attention. It didn't mean anything. It has to be an event when you use the corporal punishment. There needs to be a reason for it. Outright rebellion. And don't forget to encourage them and reward them when they have good and positive behavior. Number three, make raising children a joint effort. Agree with your wife on how we're going to do this, how we're going to accomplish it. You see, children need to see it as a joint effort. They need to see it as a unified front. Otherwise, you know what happens? Well, if old dad's a soft heart and they come make a deal, you know what's going to happen? Mom's going to resent it. It happens. Unfortunately, you know, I have to admit, I know by experience, I raised my hand, you know, as being probably guilty at times. And I wasn't in the right when I did that. Make sure that you agree. I think I told you the story, but I'll never forget this because I was a very young boy. Mom and Dad and I were on vacation up here at Kingsland, and we were staying in a cabin up there, and we were fishing on the lake at night, and we'd gone out on a fishing barge one night, and Mom was on one end of the barge, and there was a Dad on the other end. Not my Mom and Dad, by the way. But they were on both ends of the barge, and this little girl they had, and the Dad told the little girl to go up to the place ahead of the camp and to buy some more bait. So go get some money from your mom and go up there and we need to buy some more, you know, can of worms or whatever it was. So she went over to Mom and said, Mom, I need some money. I want to go up there to get some bait. Mom said, you go tell your dad that you're not going to go up there by yourself. So she traced over to Dad and he says, no, you go tell your mom. Now I'm thinking about, here's a mom and a dad that's not less than 25 feet apart. Can they not communicate? And why are they using their poor little girl for the means of communication? Make sure that you offer a unified front. Agree, come to an agreement on the rules, and then make sure that you apply those rules. Number four, learn how to interpret rules. And by what I mean by that is, I don't have a problem at times with explaining why we have those rules. Now, I realize that there are times and places when we kind of need to be a little general and say, you know, this is it. Dad said it. Do it. Don't, no questions. I understand that. But you know, in the book of Proverbs chapter 2, Solomon also adds this. I want you to notice what he says. Beginning with verse 1, Proverbs 2. My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you, so that you incline your heart to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding, yes, if you cry out for discernment and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek for her as silver and search for her as hidden treasure, here's the reward. You will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom from His mouth. For the Lord gives wisdom. From His mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up wisdom, sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly. He guards the path of justice and preserves the way of His saints. And then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity in every good path. This is what you'll get from it. And when wisdom enters your heart, verse 10, and knowledge is pleasant to your soul, discretion will what? Preserve you. Understanding will keep you, to deliver you from the way of evil and from the man who speaks perverse things, from those who leave the paths of uprightness and walk in the way of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perversity of the wicked. You see what Solomon is doing to Father? He says, listen to me. And he even gets, you know, in the book of Proverbs, pretty blunt and plain. He says, don't you roll your eyes at me. But here's why. Why? Because if you'll listen to me, I'm telling you, I know the best way. I have experience. I've been around a little longer. Listen to me. If you'll listen to wisdom, it will preserve you and it will keep you away from evil. So I have no problem at times. Now, I don't mean we need to make a bargain with our kids. That's not the point. But I have no problem at times with sitting down and clearly teaching the values behind the rules that we have established. No, we don't do that. Here's why. Yes, you can do that. And here's a good reason why it's okay to do that. Finally, rule number 5, handle your anger. Keep it in check. Make sure that the anger primarily is vented toward the conduct, not toward the child. Separate emotion from action. But don't vent your anger on the children, but on the conduct, the rule that is violated. And so we have the third basic need of the wife, and that is that fathers, she needs family commitment. And so a way of reviewing these 5 basic needs. And if women would learn to focus on his needs, and husbands would learn to focus on her needs, then I can assure you that you can build a lot of joy and contentment and happiness in your marriage. You know, one of the number one reasons why marriages don't work? Incompatibility. So how can I learn to be compatible? Well, number one, incompatibility is a common complaint. Being irresistible is the cure. You learn to be irresistible to your mate. I'm talking husbands, you need to learn to be irresistible to your wife. I'm saying wives, you need to learn to be irresistible to your husband. Don't think about you, think about your mate. And here is how it's accomplished. Be irresistible by learning to meet their needs. You know, in the book of Ephesians chapter 5, we have this wonderful parallel between the relationship between husband and wife and relationship between Lord and the church. And in Ephesians chapter 5, Paul says, "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself, a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish." Not only is God your model, dads, but husbands, Jesus Christ and his sacrificial love is your model for the kind of husband that you ought to be. But there's also another wonderful story in that. And that is that Jesus gave himself sacrificially for all of us, that we might enjoy the fellowship we have with the Father and have that wonderful relationship. Maybe there's someone here today, understand that. If you wish to come to him today, would you come? We would welcome the opportunity to assist you in that. If we can help you in any way, we invite you to come as we stand and sing a song for you.